Yeah, so this relates to Shidduchim as well. The topic in this week's parasha, we have two parashas. This week's parasha, you can basically talk about anything you want because the whole Torah is in Parashas Kedoshim. Acharei Mois Kedoshim. In Kedoshim, there are numerous mitzvahs. I don't know the exact count. We'll have to figure it out before Shabbos. But one pasuk is Eshab Soisai Tish Moiru. Now, Ish Imoi, the Aviv Tiro'u. The Eshab Soisai Tish Moiru. A man, Ish, Imoi the Aviv Tiro, a man shall fear his mother and his father, and the Eshab Soisai Tish Moiru, and you shall observe my Shabbosis. Okay, so this part, what is Rashi asked the question. Now, there are a few things I want to talk about. We'll see how much time we have. A little in this topic, a little drush. And a little halacha. Let's first do some of the halacha parts. In this week's parasha, it tells us there's a mitzvah for a man to fear his mother and his father. And also, what did I just say? Ish imo v'aviv tirohu. V'yashab soisai. I'm getting a little confused. Ish imo v'aviv tiro v'yashab soisai tishma. The pasuk juxtaposes the fear. Let me open the chumash. I apologize to you. Let's cut to the chase. 19:3. Tamari's there. What do you say?
Yeah, that's what she said.
Woo! Tamari's listening to the shir. I have such a choshva guest listening to the shir. Ish imo v'yaviv tiro v'yashab soisai tishmar ani Hashem Elokeichem. We have over the beginning of Parashas Kedoshim, a man shall fear his mother and his father and shall observe my Sabbaths. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Rashi, famous Rashi. Everyone learns at least the first few Rashi on the Parasha. Ish imo v'yaviv tiro hu kolechem mikem tiru aviv imo. Each one of you. Ish. The reason why it says the word ish is to indicate there are no exceptions. Every single member of Klal Yisrael has an obligation to fear his father and his mother. Rashi, if you notice, he reverses. It's a very interesting Rashi, because Rashi here reverses what it says explicitly in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Imoy v'aviv. And Rashi writes, Kol echad mikem tiru'u aviv imo. Why did Rashi reverse the words of the Pasuk? How did Rashi do that? Okay, that's not our point. Zeh pshutoy umidrashoy ein li ela ish. Isha minayim, kishu oimer, tiro, plural, hare kan shinayim. Not only does this apply to a man, a woman also has an obligation to fear her parents. Imke lamanemar ish, sha ish sipek biyodu lasais, aval isha rishus acher ha'achayrim olecha. The reason why the Pasuk said addressed a male and did not address a female, even though the halacha applies to a female as well, because it says that at the end of the Pasuk, Beloshen Rabim Tirohu, is because, just practically speaking, the Pasuk is being very pragmatic, is that generally a man has more opportunities to fear his father and mother because he is independent, whereas a woman, more often than not, is restricted. She has her first obligation, or just practical matter, she's with her husband and has duties to her husband and to her children, and is just not available for her parents. Okay, that's Rashi. Then Rashi goes on to describe why it says mother before the father. Kan hikdim aim la'av, lefish, and whereas in the Aseres HaDibros it says kabeid es avicha v'yasimecha. What is the difference between the Aseres HaDibros and Parshas Kedoshim? The Aseres HaDibros, we focus on honor. Here we focus on fear. Honor comes out of an expression of love. Fear is a very different emotion. Fear and love are two different emotions. Generally, love is a much more powerful emotion. How do you know love is more powerful than fear? Because a person is able to have love even when he's not in the presence of the object of his love. In fact, when you're distant from your love, you have even more love. It has an effect upon your mind to have even more love. But fear usually is only in the presence of danger. When a person distances himself from the object of fear, he is not afraid. So the fact that fear is limited to space or to nearness, whereas love is unlimited, is a clear proof that the emotion of love is stronger than the emotion of fear. We have an obligation to fear Hashem. What does that mean? It means to bring Hashem close. Think about it. When the Pasuk says, Pasuk tells us numerous times, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. What does that really in essence mean? When you take the var that I just told you, and that serves as the backdrop to the mitzvah of fearing Hashem, the Pasuk really is telling you, bring Hashem close to you. Because the reality is, whether you like it or not, you are afraid of Hashem. That's just a fact. Any neshama has come from, every neshama is a spark of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it's just reality. It's reality that your neshama, our neshama, is terrified. We're in awe. I should say terrified. It's not a good word. We're in awe of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So how come we don't feel it? How come we walk around the whole day and we're just clueless? The answer is because we have managed to distance ourselves from Hashem to such a degree that we don't feel it. In order to avoid fear, all you need to do is social distancing. Okay, if you distance yourself from the object of your fear, you are not afraid. Love doesn't need love. Love exists no matter how far you are. Doesn't matter. The Torah says to us, I want you to fear Hashem. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. What kind of command is that? Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. It's like telling to a person, telling man that you should fear Hashem is equivalent to saying, put your hand down on the table. I'm going to take a hammer now, and I'm going to bang on your hand so hard, you're going to smash all the bones in your hand. And I want to tell you, I'm giving you a commandment. When I do this, I want you to be in pain. Remember that. I want you, when I take the hammer and bang you so hard, I want you to have kavana, intent, and prepare, recite a l'shem yichud, learn all of the svarim out there in the world about what it means, pain, what pain is all about. Study, get a PhD in pain, and then sit down and get ready so you should have the correct kavana at the moment when I take the hammer and give you that zetz, you should feel the pain. This is stupidity, because pain is a reality. I don't need you to warn me and to tell me to prepare myself to feel the pain. This is the world. This is the world of reality. So what in the world does it mean in the Torah when the Torah says, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira? It's equivalent to saying, feel the pain when I bang on your hand. The answer is, let's understand. If you are afraid, fear is painful. There's an emotion. The way a human being copes with fear is through distance. That's the mitzvah. If you're afraid of a person, get out of his way. Go somewhere else. Don't get in his way. If you have an object from which you're afraid of, the solution is social distancing. That's really what it is. Okay, this funny term, not so funny, it's pretty sad, but that term is really what is the antidote to fear. When the Torah tells us, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, Torah is in essence telling us, go close. Get closer. Get closer to the fire. Do not social distance from the object of your fear. Get closer, closer, closer. The closer I get, the more yira I have. It's against my nature to be in a state of fear. It's not comfortable to be afraid. Well, this is a little different. When it comes to the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not necessarily painful. It's different. We understand what that means. But the only way you can feel the reality is by getting close. Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, the instructions are, bring Hashem into your life. Have a relationship with Hashem. And Mimela, once Hashem is in the room, you're afraid. That's what the pasuk means. Now, after we understand that, and we look at the pasuk over here with the Rashi, it's amazing what the pasuk is telling you. Ish imo v'aviv tirahu. You know what that means in essence? It means have a relationship with your parents. Be close to them. Because the truth is, even though it may not seem like that in society, by nature, you are afraid of your parents. A person deep down inside, the nitzitz of his neshama, recognizes, you're my father. And if you're my father, it's natural. It's part of your neshama to be afraid of your father. So how can we see today children have chutzpah? It's because they don't have a relationship with their father. They're distant. They're far away. Sometimes they're far in location, and sometimes there's a separation of the minds. So if there's no relationship, it doesn't click, it doesn't trigger the natural fear that is built into nature for a child to fear his father. Chazal say, a makish, the fear one has for his parents, to the fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam is a reality. This is not something you need to say l'shem yichud to achieve. It is a reality. The neshama is the nitzitz of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a reality. So the only peshat in the pasuk of Es Hashem Elokecha Tira means get close. Come close to the fire. Come close to the object of what you're afraid of and have that fear because the solution, the antidote to fear is the distance. Have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam and you're automatically going to be feared. Chazal have told us something which is not obvious is that Hukash, the Yira of a person's parents to the Yira of the Ribbono Shel Olam is the same word and they're partners and therefore there's a similarity which in essence Chazal are telling us a secret of creation that built in to a person's DNA is to be afraid of his parents. And if you are discovering in your life that you have no respect for your parents, what it really means is that you're not near your parents. You have distanced yourself from your parents. And even though you'll say to yourself, you'll convince yourself that distance is just physical, no, it's not. It's in the mind. If a person has a true connection to his parents, then there is a natural fear. Just like there's a natural fear to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If a person in his mind is distant, then there's no fear. Now when Rashi says here, then Rashi's words are explosive now. Rashi is the question, who is obligated to have a relationship? See, I'm now basically giving a new translation for the word yira. Go to the art scroll, take out every art scroll in the shul, it comes to the word fear, cross it out with a black magic marker, and write it instead, have a relationship. Okay, that's what I'm telling you to do. It's because the word fear by HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not really the correct translation. It really means come close and be mele. Once you come close, you have fear. What you have to do, the instruction, the command, is to get close, to have that relationship. So now Rashi says, why does it say in the Pasuk Ish Imoy, the Aviv Tirohu, the Pasuk chose the word Ish, which implies ish, yes, isha loy. Isha, isha lo. The word isha, man and not woman. Can that really be? Is that correct? No, Rashi says the fact that the pasuk concludes with the word tirou, b'lashon rabim. If the pasuk only began with a male and concludes with a plural, something doesn't make any sense. Why does it say the word tirou at the end of the pasuk? It must be that it includes also the other gender, the female. Why then did the pasuk mislead us and say the word ish? So Rashi says, because a man is sipek biyadoi lasais. And then Rashi goes on to say, because a woman is underneath the shlita of her husband.
What does that mean exactly? If you really want to be a nitpick against Rashi, what does that mean exactly? Just because a woman is under the authority of her husband means that she can't fear her parents? I mean, what does that mean exactly? The answer is a relationship. A woman's primary relationship. There's only that much time and emotion a person has in their life to develop a relationship. A woman's primary relationship is with her husband and is with her children. She's fully devoted to develop her relationship with these entities. And that takes away from her ability to continue her relationship with her parents the way it was in the past. Whereas a man is devoted to his wife, no question about it, but the mind of a man, whatever this means, this is getting into a lot of trouble here, saying such type of things, but it's different. Whatever it is, it's different, but a man has more of an opportunity to expand his relationships, his activities, his social activities with people outside of his immediate circle. That's the way the world is set up. A woman is the Ikeres Habayis. She does not have the ability to expand her social activities to the same degree that a man does. You'll tell me in today's modern world it's not true. Maybe you're right. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe today in the modern world today, things are different. And the Pasuk says Tiro. And if it can be, surely it can be. But when you look at the Pasuk from the perspective of the ability to develop a relationship more than looking at it in just in terms of dollars and cents, when we learn this Rashi in Cheder, you get the impression that a man in ancient times, going back, you know, before the Mabul, in ancient times, a man was the breadwinner. And the woman, she stayed home. She was the Ikeres Habayis. Today, it's just the opposite most of the time, right? The woman's the breadwinner and the husband is totally lost. He doesn't know what he's doing with himself. But in ancient society, the man was the breadwinner. The woman was the Ikeres Habayis. The man controlled the finances. He had the cash in hand to do things. A woman didn't. So the Pasuk has been practical in talking to the man. But if you look at the Pasuk from the perspective that it's not really a matter of money, it's a matter of the ability to establish, to have Facebook fans, social activities. A woman is limited. She has obligations of social activities in the home, which have kedima to her children, to maintain their sanity, their happiness, and her husband as well. But the husband has a different role. He's more out there in the world developing relationships with other people in addition to his wife and children. And that gives him the opportunity to maintain that closeness to his parents. So once he's close with his parents, so now, naturally, when he's in their presence, he's going to feel the fear, tirohu, of his parents. Okay, so that is one element. Just but more, that was really more of a Haggadah. Now, in the world of halacha, I really just to extrapolate a little bit. What about fearing a father-in-law and a mother-in-law? Is there such a halacha in the Torah? Min haTorah, midrabanan, for a person to have the same degree of respect for his that he has or fear that he has for his mother and father, is he obligated to express that fear to his in-laws? So this is a very controversial topic. Is it certainly? If you're smart, you will. If you know what's good for you, you will. But the question is, in halacha, in the world of halacha, what does halacha say about this? So there are many sources, and the sources are very fascinating, and they conflict. The first source we have of having derech eretz for father-in-law, I believe, is Moshe. Everyone's Moshe, the Chosein Moshe. We find that Moshe had the utmost respect for Yisroi. When Yisroi came, Moshe Rabbeinu himself, it says in Rashi, was serving. Vayavoy Moshe. Moshe came out. He came out of the of Machanes Shechina. He came to greet, when he heard that Yisro came, he came to give him the highest degree of honor. You have to also understand that Yisro was not so nice to Moshe Rabbeinu. Yisro, if you read the Midrashim, Yisro wanted Moshe to die. It says in the Medrash, when Yisro came, Yisro, he didn't know what to do with Moshe. Moshe was a fugitive from Egypt, and Yisro did not want to harbor a terrorist. Okay, it's like, you know, like either you're with us or you're against us. The superpower of the world in the lifetime of Yisro was Egypt. If the Egyptians knew that Yisro was harboring a terrorist, it would not be good for him. And the Medrash says, exactly because of that, when Tzipporah told her father what happened, so we just read the pasuk, where is this man? Let him come and eat lechem. Yeah, that took place, I think, 13 years later, something like that, or maybe many years later. The pasuk skips many, many years. There was a lot more that happened in between. Immediately, he took him and he threw him into a dungeon to hide him and to basically starve him to death. He threw him into a dungeon, threw away the key, and figured he'll eventually die from starvation. However, there was a love story taking place right under his nose. Tzipporah liked him, and every day she threw down some potatoes. There were no potatoes in Egypt, but she threw down there into the basement. She threw down into the dungeon every day some cucumbers, some leftovers from dinner that Moshe Rabbeinu Shavuot to eat. And the way everyone in Shidduchim knows this is the Aleph Beis of Shidduchim. If you don't know this, then you don't even know the Aleph Beis of Shidduchim. The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. Never heard that before? The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. And Tzipporah, she fed Moshe Rabbeinu for, I think, 7 years, maybe it was 13 years. And by feeding him secretly in the dungeon, they developed a relationship. And years later, when Yisro discovered that he was still alive, he was shocked out of his mind. How in the world are you still alive? I threw you away into the dungeon. I threw away the key. You were supposed to starve, death, and die because my life is on the line. If Paro finds out that I'm harboring a terrorist. And when he discovered that his own daughter was feeding him, Yisro was a very wise man. That's why from him came the Bnei Keni. His grandchildren were the biggest Talmidei Chachamim in Klal Yisrael, because they had Groisa Yichus. The father was very smart. And the father said to his daughter, if you like him so much that you're willing to secretly throw him food down into the dungeon for all of these years, then you should marry him. Okay, what did Kalba Savua do to Rabbi Akiva? Kalba Savua was just the opposite. He said to his daughter Rachel, Rachel, you're feeding this guy. You like this guy. If you want to marry this guy, I don't want to know from you. I don't want to know from you. Get out of my house. I will disinherit you. Over my dead body, will I allow you to marry the person who you love? Because I don't like him. Yisro was just the opposite. It's incredible. Just said to him, just the opposite. If you risk your life, if you risk your loyalty to me all these years by secretly feeding this guy, then you should marry him. Now, put Moshe Rabbeinu into the equation. What do you think Moshe thinks of this shver? You wanted me dead. You didn't believe in me. I came to your home. You threw me into a dungeon with the expectation that I should die from starvation. No, we're not on the same page. And Moshe Rabbeinu should reciprocate by giving Yisro the ultimate kavod, by telling him, Fatihi lanu le'inayim, I want you to lead us in the desert. I want you to guide us. I want you to be with us. We'll give you anything. Don't leave us. Moshe was the waiter
Moshe was the Godol Hadar, and the Pasuk says explicitly that when Yisroel came to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe said, everyone sit down. He put on the apron, and he was the waiter at the Suda to give cover to a Shver Yisra. Is that not amazing? And why? So you know, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was like one of those people who leaps out of the Pirkei Avos. The Midas Tovos, he's a shuffle in Onav, he was Moichel on his Kavod, he was at Alugut Midas, he had all the Midas of the Pirkei Avos. Or, you know what you can say also? That Moshe Rabbeinu was Makir Toiv to Yisro, because Yisro told his daughter, my daughter, if you really like him that much, then marry him. Moshe Rabbeinu was Makir Toiv to the Shver, that the Shver said to his daughter, if you like him, marry him. Even though I don't like him, but I give you permission to marry him. That's an amazing thing. Rabbi Akiva was not so fortunate. Rabbi Akiva told his daughter, do not marry him. And if you marry him, I'll disinherit you. That's the Pasuk says Beferish that Yisro was masking to the Yoichal Lechem. In the Yisro, it says Yisro arrives on the scene. He arrives on the scene. What's the Pasuk? Let me go to the Parasha. It's an explicit Pasuk that Yisro gave permission to his daughter and in fact encouraged his daughter to marry Yisro. That's quite a feat. How many father-in-laws do you know encourage their daughter to marry their spouse? There's always some smirking and some cynicism. Vayishma Yisro, we'll go jump into the Pasuk. Oh, that's the wrong Pasuk, I'm sorry. The Pasuk is back in Parshas Bo. Bo, Parshas Shemos. In Parshas Shemos, let's see, it's just to Vatavoina el Ruel Avihen Vayomer. Madu my heart in Bohayam by Taimarna Ish Mitri hits Lenin Vian Gamdlid Lolanu Vayomer el Yisroy Vayoy. Lomo ze azavten eso ish kiren loy viyoichal lochem. Eat bread. Rashi, viyoichal lochem, all the yisoidos, all of the yisoidos of life are in Chumash and Rashi. We should really learn just the whole the Chumash and Rashi. Shema yiso echad mikem ki im alechem asheruhu oichal. Rashi says he should marry one of you. You like him, marry him. He gave permission. He wanted. So Moshe had a karas hatoif. Now the question over here is, when Moshe Rabbeinu had a karas hatoif to Yisro, was this al pi halacha? Or is this that Moshe was a nice guy? What's the halacha? It's not so simple. Another very fascinating source to this issue is David HaMelech, in his relationship to Shaul, Melech Yisrael. Shaul wanted to murder David, to kill David. Shaul viewed David as a threat. But David was Shaul's son-in-law. David was married to Michal, the daughter of Shaul. David, in the Ma'ara, when Shaul was chasing after David to kill David, David had the opportunity to take the life of his father-in-law. He chose not to, and instead he cut off the corner of his garment, and later he met up with him, and he said to his father-in-law, Shaul, what do you want from me? Why are you trying to kill your son-in-law? I could have killed you, but I held back. That should be enough of a reason why you should have a ceasefire. And the way he addressed his father-in-law is with the words, the Ovi, my father. Re'e gam re'e. Look closely what's in my hand. Es kenaf mi'ilcha biyadi, the corner of your garment that's in my hand. Ki bocharti es kenaf mi'ilcha v'loy harakticha. I selected to take the corner of your garment instead of taking your life. Even though if I would have taken your life, it would have been in self-defense, and I would be innocent. Any bezin would exonerate me for the act of taking your life because it was in self-defense. Yet I went out of my way not to take your life because of my respect and love for you. Chazal take this pasuk and they focus on one word in this pasuk. Why did David address Shaul with the word Avi, my father? He wasn't his father. He was his father-in-law. And he was the king, he was the melech, he was his rebbe. There are many different words you can use to describe a person. And in fact, if you call someone your someone who's not your father by the title father, to a degree that's an insult to your father. You only have one father. You only have one mother. You don't abuse the word Avi and Imi. You don't use it for someone who's not your father, not your mother. So David, who has no limit to titles and terms that he can use to refer, to address his father-in-law, why did he select the word Avi? Chazal take this as a very significant indication, and they learn halacha, that a person has an obligation to have respect and fear his in-laws equal to the respect of his own parents. Now, from the story of Yisro, you don't get that, because Yisro, you learn that Moshe was a nice guy. Moshe, Yisro is here. He goes out to greet him. You know, it's a shver, so he gave him kavod. He served him a meal. There's a lot to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. But Chazal somehow, from their words, you learn, they were much more satisfied. The degree of satisfaction of looking at David and Shaul was much more meaningful, because there's something much more concrete in this pasuk that you don't have in the other pasuk. And what that is the exact word. He's referring here to his father-in-law, Shaul, with the term Avi, father. And that is an indication that a father-in-law, and by extension a mother-in-law, have the same status in halacha like a parent. Just like there's an obligation of ish imo v'aviv tiro, with all of what that entails, which not whatever that is for now, not for now, whatever those laws are, those exact same laws will apply to a father-in-law. This is what it says, the sefer called the Sefer, La halacha. So this is your idea. Okay, this is what it says in Shul. You have to go through all the sources. I don't have all the sources, but basically in Shulchan Aruch, in your idea, Rav Yosef Karoy, he paskins like this: Chayiv Adam b'chvoid chomiv. Okay, and what is so unique about this psak halacha from Rav Yosef Karoy in Shulchan Aruch is nowhere in the entire Shas, in Bavli, Yerushalmi, in any of the Tosafim, does it actually discuss this topic? The topic of the halachic requirements to fear a father-in-law is not mentioned in the Bavli, and 99.9% of what the Mechaber writes in Shulchan Aruch can be traced to exact words in the Gemara. He's being machria, because there are contradictions in the Gemara. There are many opinions. There are many different scenarios. The words have to be understood, what it means. But everything is a sugya. Every siman in Shulchan Aruch and Shas is traced to a sugya in Shas. Every sugya in Shulchan Aruch, you go look on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. It tells you where the sugya appears, and that's where you start. You learn, if you take learn halacha seriously. So you learn the Gemara. You learn halacha. You go to the Gemara, and you learn all the Rishonim, and then you learn all of the other Gemaras and Shas that are related to this Gemara, and you learn what the Rishonim say there, and then you go through the Acharonim, you mafalpel back and forth, and you go through the Rosh, and the Tur, and the Shulchan Aruch, you go through the whole Chag Gadah, until you finally have clarity to appreciate the depth of the words of the Mechaber and all of the modern commentators. that elaborate upon the Mechaber. But in Shulchan Aruch, he writes, Shechayiv Adam B'chvoid Cham. But over here in the Sefer, I'm reading from over here, the Oitzim Machmadim, we use all the time, it's a halacha that does not appear in Shas, which is highly unusual. Where is the earliest source? I told you the source. And the source that I told you comes from a Midrash Tehillim, Midrashim. Shulchan Aruch does not usually extract halacha from Agada, from Midrashim. This is the notable exception. It comes from the story of Dov, which I told you, the fact that he said over there the word Avi. Now, the next level of a question is this that it says in Shulchan Aruch, is this De'oraisa, or is this a Din De'Rabbanan? And that already is subject to a debate among the Acharonim. According to the Bach, and the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon writes that it's D'oraisa. Okay, it's very, very fascinating. He writes over here, the Hagoyin mi Vilna, he said that, it's sketchy. All this information I'm telling you, what's so fascinating about this topic, it's not in Shulchan Aruch, it's in the Medrash, and we don't really have solid sources to build a concrete approach to deal with this. There's a letter from the Vilna Gaon. Okay, how often can you paskin from a letter? If I write you an email, you can take that as an indication of halacha. It's the biggest Purim joke. Whatever I say is a joke. When I write it in an email, it's a joke. Well, guess what? What the Vilna Gaon writes in the letter is sacred. So the Vilna Gaon, what he wrote is, unbelief. I mean, we have from the Vilna Gaon enormous amounts of material, enormous amounts of his writings are vast. But he writes over here, the Vilna Gaon, at one point in his life, he traveled to Eretz Yisrael. He didn't make it. He came back. He wrote a letter to his wife. V'gam basi levakesh leishti shetechabed es imi, that he's giving instructions to his wife that his wife should give honor to the Vilna Gaon's mother. So again, this is not even a father-in-law. This is the mother-in-law. He's telling his wife, I demand of you to give honor to my mother. You give honor to your mother-in-law. May you're listening over here to the Shviga jokes. Give honor to your mother-in-law. Kimoy shekosov ba Torah. And he added in his letter the words Kimoy shekosov ba Torah. So everyone, people who are into this type of stuff, they get so excited because this is not even in Shulchan Aruch. It's only in the Medrash. And the Beis Yosef paskins la halacha. And we have a Vilna Gaon whose knowledge of Kol Torah Kula is beyond description. And his word is the final word in almost everything. And he writes a letter. And we have confidence that whatever he writes in the letter is filled with sanctity. And he just incidentally writes in the letter instructing his wife, please give honor to your mother-in-law, which means his mother. And he adds the words, like it says in the Torah. Excuse me.
Rabbi Levine, excuse me. But I believe that this would be a limited type of covet because a woman is obligated to her husband.
Like Rashi. Like what it's... So you're saying that when the Vilna Gaon is, you have an obligation to honor me, Minat Torah. A woman has to give honor to her husband. Where does the Taka say that a woman has to give honor to her husband? And because you must honor me, so I give you the command, so it turns into a deraisa. Okay, so this becomes over here a whole chadgadya, a whole debate, what exactly right. In the Hanami, you're right. I'm just pointing out these little tidbits, which all contribute to this big dilemma that the Poskim are a little, there's no clarity in this. What exactly is the degree of honor that a person is required to show for his father-in-law versus his parents? When you're in a room and you were dressed, let's say it's always very uncomfortable, you always see this by newlyweds, how will they address their in-laws? What are they going to call them? You're going to call them Yankel. How are you going to call your father-in-law? Yankel?
all of you, how do your in-law children address you? So I have some friends who told me that they make it their business never to have to address their father-in-law or mother-in-law. They always make sure they never need to refer. They don't want, they're not so comfortable. Their relationship is not, 100%. They don't want to call them Abba. They don't want to call them father, dad, all the mushy terms. They don't want to. They just refuse to use a term of endearment that they use for their parents and use that.
Shmer, they call it Shmer. Yeah.
I know someone in my family, I remember very distinctly, someone in my family would call my grandfather, he would always say the Shver. He would always refer to my grandfather as the Shver. What is the Shver? The Shver. That's the Shver. That's the way he referred to my grandfather. Why? I don't know. I was a little kid then. I don't know what was his thinking. But there are people who call their father, they call him Abba. If they call their father Daddy, they call their father-in-law Abba, or they call their father-in-law Abba, they call their father-in-law Daddy, or they call them, I don't know, you know better than me. You know all the different terms. But I have a friend, I know one, he always laughs to me about this, that he never, that was an issue when he got married. How will he address his father? And he doesn't like his father-in-law from day one. They did not get along from day one. And he felt very uncomfortable. And he's laughing at me. Oh, it's been so many years now. And Baruch Hashem, I never ever had to address him. So I never, it's not an issue. He never had the situation where he has to call him by name. He always finds an excuse somehow to speak to him without addressing him. So that's a very big issue. How do you address? So he cites over here a very interesting minhag. A very interesting minhag is that we know that when we refer to our parents, we refer to them in the first person. We say you, how are you doing today? You don't say to your father, how is the father doing today? Sounds like a priest, right? How are you? You. The Ribbono Shel Olam, you say you. Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam. You say to Hashem, you Atah. Yet we know that the custom is that when you speak to a person of distinction, you don't say you. When you speak to a holy rabbi, you say the Rosh Yeshiva. What would the Rosh HaYeshiva allow? What does the Rosh HaYeshiva want me to do? What is the decision of the Rosh HaYeshiva? There's a nimus. There is a code of conduct that is practiced in the yeshiva world, and it's very proper that you don't yet.
Rabbi Tendler always called Rav Moshe the Shver.
Oh, yeah? The Shver, okay.
I mean, he did it every day. I had him for a whole year like that. He kept saying the Shver.
But that's what he spoke to you, to the class.
Yeah.
When he addressed him personally. How did he address him personally?
He called him the Shver.
No, but that's when he spoke to the class.
He called him Shver.
Okay. He didn't say to Rav Moshe, Abba, or Tati, or... Even when he spoke to him directly, punim upon him.
He spoke to him directly, he spoke Shver.
Okay, fine. In the Chanami. Ha, yesh v'yesh. So he cites here a minog, which, I mean, today, to all these minogim don't mean anything to us, is that the minog used to be that when you talk to your father, you speak to your father in first term. You, how are you today? What do you want? When you spoke to your father-in-law, the minog, you're not going to go trace all the minogim in different places, it was always B'lashon Rabin. You spoke to him in the plural. Meaning, wait, let me give you the example. You spoke in the plural. Where is the example? I'm over here. Here it is. For example, Shalom. How do you say Shalom Aleichem or Shalom Olecha? When you give greetings, Shalom Aleichem. That's not, if you're speaking to a single person, that's not correct grammar. Shalom Olecha, peace upon you. When you greet your friend, Shalom Olecha.
Kiddush Levana. What do we all say Kiddush Levana? Shalom Aleichem. How many people are you saying Shalom Aleichem to when you make that statement? One person, one at a time. So why are we so ignorant in our grammar? Why are we saying it's very? Why are we saying Shalom? Why are we saying Shalom Alecha? Aleichem, not Shalom Aleichem. The answer is it's honor. When you greet a person, you address him in the plural. By addressing a single person in plural, it is an expression of honor. I view you to be so great, it's as if you represent the whole world. You represent many. It's not an ignorance of grammar. The reason why we address this minute still sticks with us, Ad Hayom Hazeh, that we say to an individual, Shalom Aleichem. Greeting peace upon all of yous. All of yous. All of you. You're only one person. It's an expression of respect. To address another human being.
Each person has a malach. You're saying hello to you. And
that's Kabbalah. It doesn't say that. That's already Kabbalistic principles. This is it's a min hanimus. The Peshuta Shel Mikra is... And this is actually written up very well in the Aruch HaShulchan. He writes, I'll read you the words of Aruch HaShulchan. V'da, d'bizman ha-kadmoinim, ho-yu medabrim ha-kol b'loshon noichach. It used to be the custom that when you speak to, you would speak to an individual, you would say, olecho, aval achshav medabrim le'odam nichbad b'loshon rabim. The kol shekein l'rabba. When you greet your Rebbe, you say, shalom aleichem. You speak to him. I give you another example. We speak today in English in the third person. What would the Rebbe like? What could I do for the Rebbe? How is the Rebbe? How is the Rosh HaYeshiva? How is the Rav? You've all done this. How is the Rav? How is the Rav feeling? How is the Rav doing? What could we do for the Rav? What does the Rav need us to do? When you address the Talmud Chacham, you speak in third person. I don't know exactly when that came into our vocabulary and our conduct. But it's certain that in ancient times, because the Aruch HaShulchan is writing this, that it is the custom to speak to a great person, B'lashon Rabim, and to an ordinary person, you speak B'lashon Yachid. You see an ordinary person, you say, Shalom Olecha. When you see a great person, you say, Shalom Aleichem, in the plural. That's Min Hanimus. So he goes on to say that it used to be the custom, it's very interesting, is that when you talk to your father, you speak personal. Shalom Olecha. But to your father-in-law, you speak B'lashon Rabim. In other words, it what appears to be, you give more honor to your father-in-law than you give to your own father. Now that's ridiculous. That's nonsense. What does it really mean? It means like this. It means, this is a very interesting principle. It means there are three levels. The lowest level is Shalom Olecha. Greetings, peace upon you. An ordinary guy. Tom, Dick, and Harry. Guy walking down the street. You don't know him. He doesn't know you. There's no relationship. He's not a big macher. You greet him as an individual. Rabbi walks in. Oh, Rabbi walks in. You greet him, B'lashon Rabim, Shalom Aleichem. And then your father walks in. Your father, you greet him as a Yochid, Shalom Olecha. How could that be? How could it be that you greet your father the same way you greet the ordinary Tom, Dick, and Harry? The answer is, he's your father. And in life, we all know, there's a lot more than just what you see, than what comes out of your mouth. The way you say to your father, Shalom Olecha, is not the way you say to the mailman, Shalom Olecha. It may be the exact same words, the exact same syllables, but the inflection and the emotion and the kavana that accompany the words, Shalom Olecha, are infinitely greater when you say those exact same words to your father than when you say it to an ordinary person. But when you greet the rabbi, then there's a different rule. It's somewhere in the middle. You don't have the same respect for the rabbi that you have for your father. That's not proper. That's wrong. The rabbi is a rabbi. There's a different type of respect for the rabbi. And there's a different respect you have for your father. The rabbi, the custom, the proper code of conduct, again, everything today is, you know, everything today is, we live in a, the world is all mixed up today. But let's just go back to a different time when things are a little bit more organized. When you greet a rabbi, you greet him b'lashon rabbi. When you greet your father, b'lashon yach. When you greet an individual. So that means you're greeting your father the way you're greeting an ordinary guy. That's right. But guess what? It's not really the same. Because you know that in your mind, the emotion that comes out in how you articulate those words is different. And the biggest proof is Shmona Esrei. How do you read the Ribbono Shel Olam? Baruch Atah Hashem. You don't say to Hashem, how is the, may the Lord be blessed today. You, Hashem, you, I'm pointing my finger right at you. You are blessed. You are blessed. It's direct. A father is not greater than the Ribbono Shel Olam. But a shver, it's different. There's honor, but it's a different type of honor. One of the reasons why Chazal tell us we call Hashem by the name Elohim. Elohim really means authority. A bezdin is called Elohim. But we use the word Elohim in reference to Hashem. Why? Same principle. Hashem is one. To say Elohim is Lashon Rabim. We wake up in the morning, we discuss this. When you wake up in the morning, what do you say? You say Elokai. Neshama shenasata bi toharehi. The real way to use the term Aleph Lamed Hey is you are my God. Eloah. That's the singular. Why then are we referring to Hashem b'lashon rabim? This is heresy. Apikorsis. Elohim means there are two gods. Elohim is the plural of Eloah. How could you possibly say the Ribbono Shel Olam is Elohim? Bishlema Bezdin, you can address B'lashon Rabim, because Bezdin is a plural. The Bezdin, there are many Dayanim, there are many judges in court, so you can finagle that the Elohim is the proper expression to refer to a Bezdin. But to refer to Hashem Elohim, this is Apikorsis. And the answer is no, you missed the boat. It's built into the Torah is Nimus, and Midos, is a code of conduct. And the code of conduct demands that when you address an authority, a single entity, a single person who is an authority, you address him with the same rules of a rabbin. Plural, in the plural form. So we refer to Hashem with respect, Elohim. The term Elohim used to describe the Ribbono Shel Olam, built into that expression is Derech Eretz, which is an amazing insight into the way we refer to Hashem. When we refer to Hashem, Hashem Elohim, right? We have it very, very often in the Psukim, it says Hashem's name twice. We have Hashem's name twice, Yudkei Vavkei. And many, very often we have to say Hashem Elohim. What is the difference? Ask the average person on the street, what is the difference between the Shem Hashem Yudkei Vavkei versus the Shem Hashem Biyom Birois Hashem Elohim Es Hashem Averz? So they're going to quote, they're going to tell you the Rashi without beating an eyelash, without skipping a beat. They're going to tell you, you tippish, don't you know what it says in Rashi in the beginning of the Torah? Hashem is the Shem Hashem of Midas HaRachamim. Elohim is the Shem Hashem of Midas HaDin. And the reason is, if Hashem wanted to create the world with Midas HaDin, he saw the world would not survive a day. So Hashem was mishtatev to the Midas HaDin, Midas HaRachamim. And in fact, he gave kedima to the Midas HaRachamim. Beyond, it says in the Torah, Bereishis Baro Elohim, Es Hashemayim V'Es Aretz. Elohim is Midas HaDin. Hashem saw it ain't going to work. People make too much trouble. Man has got a problem. Man is by the shrink the whole day. They're not cut out for this. Okay, I give up. Beyoim Berois Hashem Elohim. Forget about Elohim. We're going to make it Elohim. Hashem Yudkei Vavkei. Midas HaRachamim. Elohim Midas HaDin. All right. That's the Pshuta Shel Mikra.
But let me tell you another pshat. Another pshat. And this pshat has much more significance than the practical level. Bereshis bara Elohim es hashamayim v'es haaretz. Excuse me? Bara Elohim? Bara Eloka. Elohim is b'loshon Ram. The pasuk begins with Abikorsis. In the beginning, the Elohim, the two gods, created the heaven and the earth. One God created, you know, bring it up. Elohim, it doesn't say Eloka. Bereshis bara Eloka. In the beginning, the God created the heaven and the earth. That's what it should say. But it says Elohim. Oh, Elohim is Yud Mem, Rabin. The Mid Rabin is two. Oh, look at that. There's a Shamayim and there's an Aretz. So one God created the Shamayim and one God created the Aretz. Isn't that the simplest pshat in the pasuk? You don't have to be a rocket scientist to translate the pasuk in that fashion. That's like Aleph Beis. In the beginning, bara, it was created. You'll say the problem. It should say. You'll ask me a question, but then the word bara is not correct. It should say baru. They created baru Elohim. You're asking a good question. Why does it say bara in Lashon Yochid? It should say baru. They created. All right, maskil. Don't chat me on TikTok. We'll figure out an answer why it says bara, does not say baru. But the fact that you refer to Hashem b'loshon Rabim in the first pasuk of the Torah is shocking, shocking. This is so disturbing. This opens up the way for all these apikarsim. And we know we have later on, Vayom Elokim Nasa Adam. Nah, but there's even a more fundamental problem. Before we get to Nasa, let us, why does it say Vayomer Elokim? It almost sounds like a committee. There was a committee of gods in the heavens that called in contractors. Let's figure out how to make a man. We're calling a call for bids. The committee, Vayomer Elokim. There was a committee of all the gods sitting at the table, and they said to all of the engineers and the computer programmers, graphic designers, Nuv, let's make man. We want to license some software to make man. We need some raw materials. Is that what it says in the pasuk Elokim? Why does it say Vayomer? It says Vayomru. So you'll say they were all ma'achid. It was like an institution. One word came out from the multitude. It's a big problem. What is the answer? The answer is when you speak about an authority with Derech Eretz, you refer to him B'Lashoyin Rabin. In the plural. So you know what that means? Bereshis, in the beginning, bara Elokim. The Ribbono Shel Olam created Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz kodma laTorah. Before anything else was created, the Ribbono Shel Olam created a principle of bara. He created such a concept that even though I am one God, don't forget that, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. But I'm also want to let you people know that when you refer to me, don't talk to me like you talk to your dog. Don't talk to me as you talk to me with respect. You talk to me, B'Lashon Rabim, Elokim. The most basic convention, which we're not all that familiar with today, because we're more familiar with third term. What does the Rebbe want? But the Ribbono Shel Olam created in the first pasuk this principle of Elokim. In the beginning, bara Elokim. I am the Eloka. I am the God of this world. But when you refer to me, it's going to be Yud Mem, B'Lashon Rabim. You're going to have respect. Because if there's no Derech Eretz and there's no respect in this world, then this world will rot and collapse. We'll not even have a chance. Derech Eretz kodma laTorah. This is interesting how it plays out in the laws of this week's parasha. In this week's parasha, it's Ish Imoy V'Aviv Tira'u V'Yashapsoisai Tishmoiru V'Makish. But in the basic, we have this principle of fearing Imoy V'Aviv. What about fearing the father-in-law and the mother-in-law? So many Poskim say without a shadow of a doubt, the answer is you're mechuyev to do so. The Ikum Mekar comes from a Medrash in Tehillim that tells us that laser focuses on the unique word that David used to describe his father-in-law, even though his father-in-law wanted to kill him, and he gave out the order. Okay, it's on record. Shlomo HaMelech, this is not some operation, like CIA operation off the books, some off the book operation where the CIA, they told some mercenary to take out some terrorist in the other end of the world. This is on the books. This is official business. It's official business sealed with the stamp of the king. David should be eliminated. Should be eliminated. Official business. Enemy number one. Enemy of the state. He must be eliminated. Yet, after all that, David says, listen, I'm married to your daughter. And therefore, the halacha demands from me to call you my father. Avi, you're my father. This Chazal learn is a makar, that when the Torah says, Kabed es avich v'yasimecha, your parent, you know who's your parent? Your father was also called your father. How far does that go? We can't go through this big debate, how far goes la halacha. But one thing we know for sure from the Aruch HaShulchan, we know from the Chassam Sefer, is that there used to be in the olden days, an ancient convention, that when you speak to your father, you speak b'lashon yachid. Because your father is like Hashem. And Hashem, we have a special rule that when you talk to Hashem, you talk b'lashon yachid generally. There are times when you say Elohim. But when you talk to your father-in-law, you give him, on the one hand, more respect, but on the other hand, you give him less respect. You give him more respect that you address him b'lashon rabim, but yet giving him more respect, in a way, is less respect. Because your father, you address b'lashon yachid. So you're giving him more, it's almost like a pshara. You're mechuyev to honor and fear your in-laws more than your father. You're giving them even more kavod. But yet, you're still giving your parents more honor because them you speak to directly. Because that's how you talk to a father. That's the way you talk to Hashem personally in the Shemayin Esh Baruch HaTah Hashem. There are times, of course, when you talk to Hashem with Derech Eretz, Bereishis Bara Elokim, but in a private conversation, it's Baruch Atah, your father is the same, your father-in-law. It may be biblical to refer to him, give him kavod, but it's a different type of honor. Some want to say that the honor you give your shver is not biblical. Medrash is a medrash! It's a medrash! Don't bring me rayos from Midrashim. Stay away from Midrashim. It's not, you know what? You know why this is a shocking thing, and most people over here are gonna fall off their chair. Why they're mechuyev to give honor to their parents, to their in-laws. And it's something you all could have avoided. It's something that you did to yourself. When you did this, you had absolutely no clue what you were doing. Someone came in, you were signing away your whole Yishuv Hadas. You didn't even realize what you did. When you got married, do you remember that? You're sitting by the chosin's tish, your mesader kiddushin picked up a handkerchief and said, sign on the dotted line. What does it say in the ksuba? It says in the ksuba that you pledge, va'ana oiker ve'eflach ve'oiker, I will on va'ana oiker, the Ezon va'afarnes yisechi lechi kihilchus guven Yehudon the zon and mafarshim and chulchul. I pledge to give honor to my wife and to support my wife. You pledge to honor your wife. Part of honor is to have respect for your wife's parents. Your wife has a biblical obligation to fear her parents and give honor to her parents. If you really honor your wife, you have to be part of her team and honor your in-laws. The honor of your in-laws is an extension of honoring your wife. Until now, we're learning that honoring a father-in-law has nothing to do with your wife. I have a wife, okay? The wife is just a hechatimsa,
because I have a wife, no, he comes along for the ride. I have an independent obligation to honor a father-in-law. It's just the way Hashem set up the world. But it's not because of your wife. It's not because it's being channeled. There's a lump that's going on. It's not a channel through her. The nafkamina would be that if the wife is no longer your wife, let's say she's no longer the wife, or wife is not living, there could be nafkaminas. But according to this mahalik, no. The honor that you're giving the father-in-law is channeled as an extension of the pledge to honor your wife. Whoever told you have to honor your wife? Where does it say in the Torah you have to honor your wife? It's a business arrangement. You get married. It's a piece of property. All the women living in the background, women listening in the background of the Zoom meeting, they're going to kill me for saying that, right? I just said that. Hopefully there are no women listening in the background. Right? Isn't that what it says? But along came Chazal, and they instituted a kesuba, and they said, don't you dare. A marriage is not just dollars and cents, an arrangement of convenience. In the ksuba, Chazal demanded that the husband sign away his life. Va'ana oiker, ve'ezoin, va'afarnes, yisechi lechi. You sign the way that you will give honor to your wife. Part of the honor that you pledged automatically includes giving honor to her parents. So it's a personal pledge. It's not a biblical pledge. They didn't bring you into this world. You're not a biological product of your parents. You accepted upon yourself to honor your wife. Define honor. Go into the dictionary and define. Part of the definition of honor is who you are and who you come from. It's and you didn't have to sign the ksuba. No one told you to sign the ksuba. You could have told the rabbi under the chosen tish. Listen, I'm getting married tonight. I'm not signing this ksuba. I have issues with what it says here. Can't we just get married without a ksuba? And the truth is, you can't. And even if you don't sign it, Chazal forced you to accept what's anyway written in the ksuba. That's called takonas ksuba. So signing is just icing on the cake. We don't have a choice. But it's a takonas chazal that it's an extension of the marriage. All right, we've discussed a whole bunch of ideas. It's late. We're going to have to stop over here. I really wanted to break it up, but I went over time. I have no regrets. So I had two parts to the shiur. And we'll do the other thing tomorrow. Mirtz Hashem. Have a wonderful day. Stay safe. Stay happy. Be well. All the best to all of you. And Rabbi Mayevsky, thank you very, very much for your fantastic shiur. Rave reports. I hope you have the recording for me. We can find the recording somewhere. You can send it to me. I can post it online.
Rave has a double connotation there.
Have a good day.